Will you pray with me? Holy God, illuminate our lives, our thoughts, and our minds. Use my words or speak in spite of them. Amen. Will you come and see the light from the stable door? It is shining newly bright, though it shone before. It will be your shining star. It will show you who you are. Will you hide or decide to meet the light? For a few moments last week, I genuinely felt like I was standing in the glow of the stable door, that I was cradled in the ancient story the way a child is cradled in its mother's arms. I felt like a little girl looking up at the glow of the lights and heard the singing again. And I wonder, can I hold that in the weeks and the months ahead? They say a preacher should hold the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. Well, the Bible in one hand and perhaps a tablet in the other. If you do that well, a light keeps shining in the darkness, and I don't mean the tablet. But I feel today as if I stumbled away from the stable where truth was simple and good and back into the news of the world where nothing is certain. But in fact, this is sort of true in the biblical story as well. A child is born, and angels sing, and shepherds come to the stable and take with them an earthy and immediate story of family and love and awe and possibility of new life. Then the magi come, the kings from afar, and what was a story of warmth and comfort, a spiritual story, becomes a profoundly political story of power and terror. The biblical story is a true reflection of the world as it is, both parts of that story. This is the biblical story. The magi come following a star. They go first to the capital of Judea, Jerusalem, because surely in the capital, in the palace, that's where the new king would be born. And they go directly to the palace and ask to see the newborn king of the Jews. Here's where I question how wise they really were, because obviously they knew there was already a king there. So they go and ask to see the newborn king of the Jews. But the Jews already have a king, Herod the Great. And Herod the Great was a ruthless king who has held power by allying himself with the Romans. Here's a little background, stuff that isn't included in the biblical story, but that all of the people of Israel and Judea would know. Herod was known for his ruthlessness. He was known, in fact, for murdering his own sons, who he thought might pose a threat to his position. Herod had absolute control over Judea as long as he did what the Romans wanted, as long as they paid tribute to Rome by enacting their taxes and their laws. When the Magi ask Herod the Great, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star at its rising," Herod is terrified, and all Jerusalem with him. They're terrified because when a new king arrives on the scene and the old king is still there, it means war. We should not take that lightly. What they faced in Jerusalem is what the people of Syria face today, a bloody struggle for power. Are you a bit confused? You're feeling a little off balance? That's the point of the story. We go from our image of the stable, a sense of hope and peace, joy and love, a manger with warm light, a small, close family scene, to a palace of wealth and comfort and murderous ambition. A scene where kings speak with kings and political advisors and plans are made that affects life and death for thousands. And the first thing we know about Herod in this story is he's a liar. The very first thing he does is lie. He says to the Magi to go and find the new king, and when you have found him, return and tell me where he is so I too may worship him. It's a deliberate juxtaposition of the two scenes. The first, a stable where a tiny child is born and angels sing, where a mother holds her baby and a man helps and protects them, and where simple shepherds gather and animals warm the room with their bodies. Things are very simple. Where the one true thing is the love manifest, love made real and present and material, embodied. The second is a scene in a palace of lavish wealth, where there is slavery and fear, lies, trickery, and deceit, and nothing is simple, and even the love of a father for his sons is bereft and twisted, the scene of power. Herod looks out on what is, frankly, a small kingdom and decides he will once again keep the kingdom through tried and true methods, lies and murder. It's at this point that I'd like to turn you not to look at the past of Herod's world, but ours. I want to tell you about a man named Vladislav Surkov. Who, you might say, is Vladislav Surkov, and why on earth should I care? The reason you might care is that he's an advisor to Vladimir Putin, but also to other world leaders. He's not a military advisor. He's something very different. He believes who wins the war is actually unimportant. What matters is hanging on to power. And the way you manage power is by using any conflict to confuse people's perception of the truth. That is, by creating circular ways of telling the story and constantly changing the story, you can control people's perception of truth and keep them off balance. He has a name for it. He calls it non-linear war. His aim is to undermine people's perceptions of the world so they never know what's really happening or who to rely on. And the underlying aim is not to win the war, but to use the conflict to create a constant state of destabilized perception in order to manage and control. Adam Curtis is a journalist who's written extensively on this, and he writes that the point of this is to push us into a sense of helplessness. So no organized opposition is possible. And he points to the fact that Britain, for example, has seen a transfer of wealth from the public purse to the richest 5% of individuals in the last 3 years on a scale that has never been seen before in British history, with almost no opposition, very little reporting, and no response from the public. Or the only one, as Curtis says, is, oh dear, not again. We might think this is a new way of doing political business, but it isn't. It's just an extension of that system of lies that we see in this ancient story. When we tell the Christmas story every year, it has a power we don't even understand. Whether we tell the story well with awe and wonder and sincerity, even when we tell it not so well, reading the old words as if they were old, somehow the story has the power beyond us as the tellers, because it holds that truth about possibility, about what's really important, that even someone small can change the world, that we can, by holding on to that glow of the stable, find our way back to truth in the midst of lies and murderous ambition. A truth about how to live in the midst of what's happening, and a reminder that it is not hopeless and we are not helpless. The Christmas story is never just spiritual. It is always also political. It is not separated from reality. It is not just a story like other stories. If it held nothing more for us than that, we would have forgotten it long ago. We would not return to it again and again. The world of economics and politics is presented to us as the only material truth, usually. And yet, we know it changes daily as the power brokers decide on new lives and new goals. So every year we return to that Christmas story with hope. The story that remains in so many ways the same and yet speaks anew every generation. We return to the story seeking a light that will illuminate what is good and true in the world, the worth of human beings, the love of God, the possibilities of new life, and the truth of human need and aspiration. When the Magi left Herod, they followed the star to where the child lay. There they gave him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, gold for a king, incense for a god, myrrh to anoint the one who would give his life for us. Though we find ourselves in the midst of lies and confusion of the powerful, though we are tempted to stay in that place or just give up the struggle for truth as hopeless, and tempted to believe that resistance is futile, like the Magi, we have to continue on the journey and turn towards the stable. The reminder that greater truth shines through. As Leonard Cohen says, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Look for the cracks. Return to the story. Seek truth in human relationship. And do not despair. Resistance is not futile. Every year that baby changes how we feel. For a few days, we live in that space of hope. And when you are tempted to just say, oh dear, not again, turn again towards the stable. And if you act in love, you may still find and follow the light. May it be so. Amen.